a special welcome to you. And welcome to this special event called One Thing in Common. This is a part of a series of events where we get different people from different walks of life, different types of work and so on, and have one thing in common, which is their faith in Jesus Christ. And we interview them, ask them a few questions, and then they give a short talk. And the talk today is on Should Politicians Do God? And our special guest today knows plenty both about politics and doing God. So he was elected as MP for Enfield Southgate in 2005 with the biggest swing of any seat in the country. He moved to the front benches in 2007 as Shadow Justice Minister. He's the founder of the Conservative Christian Fellowship and the chair of that organisation. So would you please give a big hand to David Burrows, MP.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Now, normally we would interview our special guest first and then hand over to them, but as he's an MP, we thought we'll give him the mic.
Yeah,
that's right. And then we'll quiz him afterwards. So I don't know if you want to stand up a bit higher.
Yes, I will do, yeah. It's a good idea.
But I'll hand over to them and then questions afterwards.
Well, thank you very much for welcoming me today. I'll just check if I've got close enough. Is that good enough for you? Yeah. Yes, you can't stop a politician talking, and so I've got the first word in, but you'll get a chance to have a go back at me, both, first of all, questions and then yourselves. So please have those questions ready. Now, should politicians do God? Well, before we get to that question, I want to congratulate you for coming here on a sunny lunchtime to hear about politics and God. That's quite an extraordinary thing to do, really, to be doing that on this day. But welcome, and particularly because it's an area that I've been involved in for some time. I suppose you may be thinking in your mind back to the Alistair Campbell days when he said, you know, we don't do God. That's very much out of the question. And some of you may think, well, actually, he's got a point in what is an increasingly secular liberal democracy. Why should any member of parliament be doing God of all things when they should be there representing their constituents of all faiths and none? You may be thinking back to even President Bush, who was talking about this hotline he had to God to decide whether to go to war. Is that appropriate? Is that right? You may be just thinking more widely about the place of faith and the relationship with faith and being public about it. Obviously, increasingly, there's a view, isn't there, that faith, let's say the Christian faith, is just maybe just one of those options that you can have. Yet, fine, you have that, but keep it to yourself, keep it private, and don't make it too public, let alone make it public onto the public square of somewhere like Parliament. So I want to just tease those things through and look into that issue and just hopefully provoke you into some questions as well. But look, first of all, you know, whether we like it or not, Parliament does God. Parliament does God. If you were to be invited or to attend Parliament, go on a tour, which I'd recommend, or simply turn up and lobby us, as you're very welcome to do as well. You'd attend up at Central Lobby, and there you'd obviously know your Latin, or if not, you'd ask someone who does what those funny words there that are inscribed on Central Lobby. And those words are from Psalm 127, verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, the workers labour in vain. So already, there's, you know, God's got in there at an early stage, right in the centre of Parliament's Central Lobby. Then, if you were guided down to the House of Lords, you'd come across the Moses Room. You know, there's a clue there in the name. And you open up and you go into what is a fantastic room, which has the murals of Moses taking down the tablets, the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments. And there he is in all his glory. And you're seeing for yourself words from the Bible being inscribed as the members of the Lords are scrutinising legislation. And they may well then be thinking, well, look, that's where the laws have been coming from. And then if you were then ushered into a member's lobby before going up to the gallery to watch Prime Minister's questions, let's say, you'd see inscribed again in Latin from Proverbs, fear God, not men. So there's a number of clues out there that God certainly is involved in Parliament and very much the architecture of Parliament. But it goes further than that, and you know, you just have to just look in history. In fact, you'll see statues of them as well. You'll see that there's Christians doing politics, both now and in the past. You can turn to the pages in history and go to William Wilberforce, classically, who, motivated by his Christian faith, sought indeed, was able to, with others' help, abolish transatlantic slave trade. We've now got a job still to do on modern slavery, but he certainly there was doing that. As well as what Lord Shaftesbury, the only reason he was particularly motivated to get involved in the issue of factory working conditions and seeking to ensure that there was a basic requirement in relation to employers was because of his Christian faith. If he or Wilberforce was here today to do a lunchtime talk, they'd be telling you, look, the reason that they are doing what they're doing in politics is because they do good. In many ways, I suppose, they'd be saying they do good. And that's what they're about. But I'd like to take it a stage further and say, look, you know, really, is it the case that is it just about Parliament doing God? Because you know, you could just take the view of what some members of Parliament do, which is that it's the prayers. There's prayers that start every day of Parliament, and some go there because they know they're going to be able to get a seat for the day. It's the equivalent of putting your towel down for the day, like on holiday. You go in for prayers, and you've got your prayer card, and you put it behind your seat, and you've got that for the day. Some go there for convenience and do their God, maybe. They do their prayers for that. Others for tradition, respecting the fact this is an important tradition that's gone on for some 500-600 years, always starting the day of Parliament by prayer. Others will do it because they recognise that they recognise God's authority over all matters, including over matters in Parliament and matters for that day in Parliament, and they are properly respecting that. Different reasons that people come and do God in different ways, and Emmaus should be reflective of yourselves in terms of your element of your involvement with God as well. But I'd like to also take it a stage further that it's not just about our selected politicians. Politics is actually wider than just simply members of Parliament, local councillors, people who are involved in the formal business of politics, because politics is the life of the city, it's the life of this city. It's the relationships that we have with each other, the order of society, and it permeates through everything. So we've got the politics of office, the office politics, which you'll be aware of probably. You've got, you know, the politics in the family, in the home, in the school. And so we all, whether we like it or not, have an involvement in politics. Now, you may be coming to this talk today having, I know, probably maybe a dim view of politics. I'm not sure when the question gets asked, you know, what's your view of politicians? The surveys go out. Then we rank pretty low down, and bankers are there, but we are probably just maybe a little bit further down there, or it's a close-run thing. So that's the view of politicians. But you are also engaged in politics, and you can't avoid it. And so, you know, the issue is going to be about what motivates you and what drives you. And but look, in the question about should politicians do God, the reality to turn it around is that God does politics. You can't avoid it, as much as you can't avoid going into Parliament and seeing God around. You can't avoid it by going into the Bible. You could go to a library and go to the politics section and pick up a Bible there as much as anywhere else. And if you go through the pages in the Bible, you'll see that God does politics from Genesis, making man and woman in his image creatively, but also to rule in different domains, to effectively do politics, ordering society. But then you just go through different characters in the Bible. You've got Daniel, great administrator, you've got Joseph and Nehemiah, all of them who are involved in politics. And you can continue through the Bible. If you go into the Romans, you'll see actually it's not just about individual politicians. I'm not just making the case that politicians do God just looking at individual politicians. It's actually the reality is that God himself established politics. He established politically established authorities to be his servant, to do good. And that is important to recognise, because as much as he established marriage, established church to reflect his character and order, he established authority, he established politics. So you would think it's not unusual for Christians who are part of a church to do God. It's pretty obvious that, you know, church should do God. You'd say that's acceptable. In the same way that God established a church, also established marriage, that many Christians do talk about marriage and do God in relation to marriage. Well, in the same way, established his authorities to reflect his character and order, and therefore it's unsurprising, indeed, it is very much part and parcel of the whole establishment authority that God is involved. But just in conclusion, really, just the ultimate example, the ultimate case that's made for God's involvement in politics is Jesus Christ himself. Is the reality that he came to this earth, he humbled himself even to the point of death. Is that engagement in the world, in the fact that he cared and loved this world so much, that does drive us. And it drives people to be involved in politics. It drives people to ensure that when you're thinking about politics and all the bad things that are out there, just think of this, that it's Christ's love that motivates people, that leads people to seek service rather than the abuse of power, to seek truth rather than deceit and lies, to seek cooperation rather than destructive antagonism, to seek compassion rather than indifference. And isn't that good, that politicians seek to do good, motivated by Christ's love? That, I think, is good for politics. And that is what motivates me, indeed motivates me and many others, increasing numbers of people in Parliament who are motivated to get involved in what often can be that messy business of politics, that difficult, compromising place, but it needs Christians to be there to be doing God. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm going to kick off with a few questions, and I'm sure you've got loads of yourselves you want to ask. The first thing I noticed was your cufflinks, David. Where can we get these Houses of Parliament cufflinks from?
Yeah, very good. I think Janet will have to tell you. I'm not sure they're from Houses of Parliament. They're Big Ben. Big Ben's one of my heroes.
Tell us a bit about, in terms of proportions of Christians in Parliament, how many are we talking? Are you a dying breed, or...?
No, very much on the up. There's an increasing number of us who are in Parliament. Across Parliament, there's different organisations that are supporting that. I mentioned the Conservative Christian Fellowship is the one that I'm involved in. Then there's Labour on the left and the Liberal Christian Democrat Forum. And we're really encouraging Christians to be active. There's probably a disproportionate amount of Christian activity in Parliament compared to the country.
And your own story of how you came to faith in Christ, you were brought up in a Christian home.
Yeah, that's right. So thankfully, I always knew God's love through my parents, and I was taken to church by them, and there was a good youth group, and I enjoyed being part of things. But it wasn't until about 13 that I realised it couldn't just be just going along and relying on my parents' faith, that it was about me making a personal commitment to understand the relationship that actually, extraordinarily, and I remember a speaker telling me this on a youth camp, that actually Jesus died on the cross for me. And that had a big impact on me, and I realised I needed to submit to him as my Lord and Saviour. Now, that's an ongoing thing. It's something that's not just done and dusted in the sense of my guarantee of eternal life with him is secure because of what he's done on the cross. But I need to recognise, in terms of him as my Lord, that impacts across all of my life, and that's a constant challenge, and it includes the challenge of him being Lord in the area of politics as well.
Some people who've had a Christian upbringing, they move away from it later in life, and they say, well, it was just a childlike faith, and it was a blind faith. But why are you still a Christian today?
Yeah, I'm a Christian today. It's not a blind faith. It's based on using my mind and all my faculties and reading the Bible and realising that's the source of life and wisdom. And that provides my the strength in my faith. And confidence by seeing it's a reality. It's a historical reality, what Jesus did for me on the cross and rising for me. But that doesn't mean there's not been challenges, and the challenges had an impact, but I've always been drawn back to the reality of my faith through what he did.
What would you say have been some of the main challenges to your faith?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when I was 16, my father died, and a lot of my security was wrapped up in him, has to be said, and so that was a big hit. And I suppose it made me see at that age that this is a life and death issue. It's not something just sort of to be part of a club, or the reality is that he is Lord over life and death. And I saw that in its reality with my father. And so, you know, that was a real important point when I had to take it seriously. And so that did impact greatly on me, but also enabled me to see how important it was that I had him as my Lord and Saviour.
Have you found as a politician that there are times when your faith is in conflict, or that there's a crisis of conscience for you as to whether you should stand on something or not, or vote this way or that, and how do you deal with
that? Yeah, every day there's votes. I'll go back. But every day there's a vote, and hopefully my conscience is there on all votes. And there's always challenges, and things aren't always so clear cut. I mean, you have free votes where issues of life issues, and often there's not an absolute judgment. But you need to judge with your conscience, with your party allegiance. And your constituents, and all that comes together. Now, the bottom line is, though, is that I don't, in my 20 or so years as a politician, I feel compromised any time by, certainly my faith hasn't been compromised, on my conscience, which is wrapped up in my faith. And if ever that was to be the case, then it would have to be my faith, conscience comes first.
So if there's a vote and there's a conflict between party allegiance and your conscience, as a Christian, you would go with the latter, would you?
I would. I'm voted in as a Conservative Member of Parliament. This is recorded as well, isn't it? Interesting. Chief Whip will be listening. You're voted in as a Conservative Member of Parliament, so it's a team game, and so often you are voting with the team because that's the way you can collectively get things done. And the constituents have, as a majority, signed up for that. I'm also being elected as David Burrows, and people know, and I'm upfront about what I'm about. I'm a Christian, and the values I stand for, and also there's constituents who, have to reflect their views, and so there is a real balance. But the bottom line is that you have to be true to yourself and what you're about, and if you undermine that, then you just need to get out.
Do you think there's a price to be paid for that? That maybe if you go with conscience rather than party allegiance, you'll hit a ceiling at some point and not rise as high as you would otherwise in the reshuffles?
Yes, we've had one, so it's good to be able to sort now after the reshuffle. I think there's different times, and there's times and seasons, aren't there, for lots of things. And people say that being a politician is, and your career is a marathon, not a sprint. Others say that it's also every political career ends in failure. But I think and increasingly is the case, is that people quite properly are representing their constituents' concerns, but also fundamentally what you need to be ambitious about is your calling, your causes and concerns, and keep hold of that. You may fit in, you may get a job now and again, but keep true to your constituency and your concerns. And I think if it fits in with a job in the government, then that's good. But if it doesn't, it's not the end of the world either.
One issue you got quite a lot of stick for and in the media was your stand for traditional marriage.
Yeah.
And you got a big backlash from that. And
yeah.
Death threats even. Did that surprise you, the reaction that you got?
Yeah, it shouldn't have surprised people, not least my constituents, my views on marriage, believing that marriage is, as we mentioned about it, established as one of the institutions between a man and a woman. Now, I said that as respectfully as possible to recognising alternative relationships in terms of the fact that the law provided rights that needed to be there. So I said all that, but then the reaction to that, and it got to the front page of one of the national newspapers, was considerable, because it was particularly in the social media. It was very, very hostile. It did lead, as you said, to death threats, and also it then just carried out to threats and abuse to my family and children as well. And so that, as far as I was concerned, was too far. And, as a politician, you're used to abuse. You had to get used to it. But the level of it meant that I realised I needed to stand. It actually encouraged me to stand even more clearly on not just the substantive issue about redefining marriage, but more importantly was the ability to be able to speak up and have the space, the freedom to be able to speak. And if we're nothing in Parliament, in the British Parliament, about that freedom, then what are we? And so, quite properly, it meant that I was wanting to ensure that there was the space and the assurance, the protections for people who believe in traditional marriage to carry on that view. So, yeah, it was an education.
You mentioned family, work-life balance is,
yes,
something that people here would struggle with as much as you do.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've got six children.
Yeah.
How have you managed that over the years?
Not very well, basically. Because if Janet listens to this, my wife, she'll know that. it's a balance, and it's a challenge for us all. And it's something which I need to constantly grapple with. And I think I mentioned William Wilberforce. He's one of my heroes, political heroes, but also a Christian hero, because he was conscious that he needed to be a good husband, a good father, a good leader of his household and those around him, as much as being out there in Parliament. And that's important. We need to be true and faithful in all our relationships. And so it's something I need prayer and support for, and it's an ongoing thing.
As a Christian, you'll be aware that legislation can do so much, but it can't change the human heart.
No.
The gospel can do that. So how do you sort of cope with that as a Christian politician, that awareness of the limitations of politics to bring about lasting change?
I mean, it provides a wonderful perspective for us, you know, obviously people are battling for a legislative change and cause in championing that, and knowing that God is sovereign over all of this. But it's important. We have an important role to play. We are established to be his servant, to do good, and to restrain evil. And law can do that. It can restrain evil better than it can do good, actually, in many ways. We do need, obviously, through the gospel, through the church, to be able to change lives. So it gives you a perspective, a healthy perspective. But there is things that can be done. You know, we mentioned Wilberforce again. You know, we've now got a modern slavery bill seeking to eradicate the modern forms of slavery, which are just around the corner from here. And so things that we can do which make a big difference, and you know, it's a privilege to be there to help try and do that.
And are there any particular issues that you're passionate about?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that my background is as a criminal lawyer, so most of my time as a lawyer was dealing with people in prison or in the criminal justice system who were impacted by drugs and alcohol, and so their rehabilitation, trying to make that more effective, which actually, interesting, in terms of talking about the life of the city and involvement, you know, there's many Christians involved in that area of rehabilitation and doing that, and trying to improve that. That's something I've been passionate about over my years as a politician, and will continue. Modern slavery is another matter which is also on my mind.
I could go on, but it'd be lovely for you to have a chance.
Yeah, please do.
Any questions, so please do just stick up a hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. My church, like probably many others, run a food bank.
Yeah.
You know, people with those sort of circumstances, and a number of the, I suppose, the press, and maybe some of the church, would look at the current policies as causing some of the challenges that people face with you know, financial crisis, etc.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the challenge of making some of those tough decisions that you know actually end up impacting people as much as trying to do the right thing for the country? How do you deal with
yeah. It's, it's challenging. I mean, it's, I think we need to be realistic. I mean, we can go into the food bank issue, but we won't do some detail. I think, the interesting thing is that, this is perhaps I'll say this provocatively, is that the church and church leaders have been quick to express concern about some of the impacts of the welfare changes and the benefits changes, and I know that has impacted in relation to food banks, but less so about the importance of getting people, workless households, into work, which is a great Christian principle of work. And so we need to ensure that we're fighting hard for the poor, very much so speaking up for those vulnerable people who, and if they're without food, I mean, it's desperate. And that's why the food banks have been a great movement that are run by churches. But also let's speak up about the availability of work, the importance of people getting into work, and finding ways of the benefit system supporting work rather than just benefit dependency. And so I think it's a balance. Now, we need to avoid being too binary, that we're supporting one and not the other. You make a point. It's
I suppose my question was particularly not the politics of it.
Yeah.
But you know, how do you as a Christian there, by having to deal with difficult choices.
Yeah.
That you know you can get hammered either way by.
Yeah, that's right.
But you know, holding yourself true and knowing that you're doing the right thing. How do you get that sense of assurance?
Yeah.
You know you've done the right thing even though the press may.
That's right. I mean, you like every issue, you get that from. I mean, every issue has to be carefully thought through: the constituency concerns, you know, what the party thinks, and your core conscience. And you know, I rely on the Bible to guide me. You know, I mean, Big Ben, cufflinks here, Big Ben. I'd mention Big Ben. You know, Big Ben. You go up 330 steps to the top of Big Ben, and the chimes, the prayer that goes to those chimes that's written up by Big Ben are this: all through this hour, Lord be my guide, that by thy power no foot shall slide. Now, that's something which I need as much as we all need in our work environments, is that he's my guide to be able to chart my way through those difficult issues. Christians, I think, are really well placed because we've got that link to grassroots concerns such as around food banks and people fighting poverty and injustice. We've got a God that cares passionately about that, that we see through the Bible, and then we can be able to take that forward and influence Parliament.
Tomorrow the House of the Lords will
be
You mentioned something very, very interesting, because you said the Lord can do more of preventing evil than actually do good. And the current law, in some ways, is better at protecting vulnerable people than the proposed changes which may put unnecessary pressure on those who are vulnerable.
Yeah.
If this was legalized, many would pressurize.
I'm very cautious about legislation. I think, you know, one can over-legislate as well, which can cause problems. And you know, one of the primary duties of Parliament is in relation to restraining evil and ensuring there's proper laws in place that can be enforced. And protecting, obviously, the vulnerable is a key area. And I think what we need to do as parliamentarians is be ready. And it's interesting, we talk about social media and other things, there's a whole lot of voices out there that need to be heard. There's also a huge number of people who aren't heard. There's the voiceless. And at the very least, parliamentarians need to be speaking up for the voiceless, listening very carefully, in a sense, to the voiceless, if that makes sense. And no more so than this assisted dying issue, where, you know, where I believe that the right to die that's proposed by strong advocates, and one has to be very sensitive, these are awful situations, really difficult situations, they have to be dealt with carefully and compassionately. That right to die could easily slip into a duty to die on individuals who are not getting the headlines here, who are very much on their own and haven't got advocates, who may feel that their life is less valuable, and that really worries me. Christians need to be active very much. There's obviously the strong palliative care movement to try and make these difficult cases more exceptional. But I think the slippery slope argument, which can easily be used, is a real one with this case. So, yes, Friday is going to be 130 or so people speaking in the House of Lords, and then it will eventually get to us and the Members of Parliament, and it's one of the big issues for the coming parliamentary year.
It's also the case that when, at the moment, the proposed legislation is limited to 10 million people, but once you let a little bit gap open in the legislation, the next will be, well, why should it be limited to 6 months?
That's right. I mean, the proposal is for those who 6 months will die in 6 months. And you can argue, well, if it's so hard for them, someone else who's in unbearable pain may say, well, look, why can they have a right to die and not me? And how do you distinguish between that? It's a really difficult area, but I hope and I expect the Commons to hold the line on this, but it's going to need careful consideration.
You mentioned in your opening remarks that Parliament has got verses scribbling Latin everywhere.
Yeah.
My question is, would you get concerned that perhaps maybe in the future Parliament may move away from that stand, or do the decisions and the discussion that happens today actually give evidence that
I think we have a strong Christian heritage, and that's reflected particularly in Parliament. And certainly, it doesn't seem to move to want to dilute those. Those are respected by people, you know, Christians and others, and people of no faith at all. People do respect and understand that heritage. I think the really good question is how far is both that heritage, but also now, as I said, there's an increasing number of Christians in Parliament. How much is that impacting upon legislation? That's a good question. It's hard for me to judge that. But I think what matters is it's not just about parliamentarians passing laws and Christian parliamentarians getting their passing laws. If there's more Christians, I think, from my point of view, that's a good thing. It's a healthy thing. It's not just a healthy thing for passing laws. It's healthy for their constituents, having people that are hopefully imbuing values of speaking the truth with integrity and compassion and all those things that we need in politics. But I think it's a partnership also. out there. There's legislation from years gone by like Wilberforce. It wasn't just down to him, it was a network of people that were supporting him outside of Parliament as well. And that's why it's important for Christians to be engaged and mobilised, along with all people of, you know, support the common good, to be doing that. And that's what we probably have lapsed. So the marriage debate, which caused such a furore, in many ways Parliament was only representing and reflecting what the country at large thinks. And really it's incumbent on church and others, Christians, to be out there in the coffee shop, in the pub, to be talking about issues, to be engaging in issues, so that we don't get a situation in which we were with the marriage debate, where I learned from my wife at the school gate that basically they agreed with me, but a lot of people agreed, but they wouldn't want to say it in public. Now that's something which is a real issue, and people need to talk about their faith, talk about how it impacts, talk about issues and values which are good for us all, and not leave it to it's too late to a parliamentarian simply reflect the common view.
Time for one last.
Sorry, I've talked too much. Yeah.
Question, so I'll turn back towards this. Just ask this now. I was intrigued that you had the opportunity to ask you of the kind of yourself. Because a few weeks or so ago, there was this second British year Christian.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of an uproar in my
comments.
And to be honest, I was surprised and didn't expect that the Lukaku was a Christian, the Lukaku was a Christian, and anyway, so the discussion around the marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd be just cautious about judging him too much in terms of his Christian faith. He does profess to be a Christian, but I think what he was saying was what he did the year before, and the year before that, and the year before that. It just got a lot of publicity this time, and he was just reflecting and commentating on what is a very obvious point in many ways. I've mentioned about the parliamentarian. So Christian heritage, he was commentating on our Christian bedrock in this country, and the fact that it has an enduring value. I think what was interesting was the reaction to that, particularly from people who militantly felt that, how they felt affronted by even saying that. And if people of other faiths, leaders were saying, of course say that, we've got no problems with that at all. And so he's more talking about the security and our identity as a country, rather than saying that there's a huge number of Christians around that means this is a Christian country. I think, have your view on David Cameron, but pray for him as well. I said he's on a journey, as all of us in many ways, and, there are people who hold different views, but, you know, there are Christians who did support the legislation on marriage. So, you know, just hold that in time. But look, I think it is a... We need to be able to use the most opportunity to ensure that people understand that, yes, we may well be a Christian country, but we can't just rely on that heritage. We need to, as Christians and others in churches, we need to be doing all we can to recognise how good it is for all society.
Unfortunately, our time has gone. I just want to draw your attention to the little blue slip you've got. If you don't receive weekly details about the lunchtime talk show and the barge and then the ideas store, if you just fill that in with a name and email, we can make sure you get those. Next week, our topic is Where is God in a Messed Up World? So please do come back for that. And it just remains for me to say on behalf of everyone, a very big thank you to you, David, for being with us today. But before...
For just a little commercial, although I've run out of the cards, if anyone's particularly interested in engagement in public life, there's a Christians in Politics network that encourages people in, and if you want to contact me, I'm particularly involved in the Conservative Christian Fellowship, but there's other political parties as well. We have an engagement in public life course that particularly encourages people. So if you're interested in that, then just drop me an email. I've got a few cards I can hand out as well, and I can send you the details.
Great. Thank you very much for coming.